This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
Are you there, Sam?
Yep, hang on, I'm just turning that on.
Is our guest ready?
Yep, I've got the music ready.
Can you hear me okay?
Yep, sounds great.
Cool. Otago Access Radio, in partnership with Otago Polytechnic, brings you Blowing Bubbles.
Blowing Bubbles brings you positive conversations with people in their bubbles around the world.
We're curious about how people are finding new ways of life, being and problem solving. Every Wednesday, the Sustainable Lens team of Samuel Mann and Mawera Karatai reach out from our bubbles to chat with interesting and positive people around the world.
Broadcast on Otago Access Radio, 105.4 FM in Dunedin, and streamed and podcast on oar.org.nz.
Bringing joy, connection, kindness and peace in all the days ahead.
Welcome to Blowing Bubbles, positive conversations with people in their bubbles, their safe spaces around the world. I'm Samuel Mann, I'm at Otago Polytechnic in Otago, Dunedin, and I am joined today by Jean Ross, Professor Jean Ross.
Hello.
Welcome, Jean.
Thank you.
Jean, you're the busiest person on the planet.
No.
I'm sure you are.
It's just got lots of energy, Sam. Got lots to do.
What are you busy with this week?
This week is finalising the draft of chapters for an international book on rural advanced practice nursing with around about 60 co-authors around the world, and pulling together those chapters and parts that are missing. What else am I doing? Oh, I'll tell you what else I'm doing. I'm looking at sustainability and the well health of the nurse educators in the School of Nursing and the environment in which we work.
Tell me about rural advanced practice nursing. Four things there, all of them needed.
Okay, so rural, geographical locations, generally isolated, could be rural, remote or islands, and have a low density population, generally high indigenous, and are not well served for the provision of healthcare. In addition to that, those that do serve those communities have a vision, and it is a collective vision to improve health disparity, improve the access to healthcare, and work with the local communities and the populations that reside there as to what they need. So identifying their health needs, what they need, and providing for it, and being very, very adaptable to that. And that's the advanced practice of those nurses that practice in those environments. Generally, they are rural nurse practitioners, rural nurse specialists, and CNSs, which is the clinical nurse specialists. So their scope of practice is extremely broad. It is from birth to death. It is over the lifespan. It is related to acute presentations, so emergencies and urgent care, complex presentations, mental health and substance use, education, that is of the community, education of themselves, education of each other, and now moving into the contemporary world of displacement, disturbance, disruption as to what is occurring in rural areas. So anything from climate change to the changes in the weather patterns to those issues that we are seeing even in New Zealand of food insecurity, the provision of economics that rural have tended to be that help the country's prosperity, and just changes, complete changes in what's happening in the world.
Let's take a couple of steps back. What got you into rural nursing?
Oh, good question, Sam. Well, I come from a very isolated area of Holyhead in North Wales, UK. So it's an island off an island. Next stop is Ireland, surrounded by the coast. And I wouldn't say that it was isolated in the terms of low population, but definitely for services. So as growing up, we always needed to travel into England for different things. So, you know, you can say that is easily shopping, but always going to concerts, but generally for healthcare as well. And so what got me into rural was rural can be termed on a number of different definitions. So I'm very much focused on inequity and how can we improve the health of people, communities, and now these days the planet. And then when I was a charge nurse, I was very much aware of issues of health provision from our local district general hospital in Bangor, North Wales, where patients needed to go into England for healthcare. And generally those were people who Welsh was the first language, they'd never been to England themselves, and here they were needing to go and have treatment in England, leaving their small rural areas, coming to Bangor, the city, the big city as they would call it, and then having to go into England. And then I came to New Zealand in 1991, and we lived in Oxford, North Canterbury, so a rural community, and I did quite a lot of brought new ideas there about health promotion, looking after the community, and it kind of gelled. And then I moved into being the co-director of the National Centre of Rural Health in New Zealand.
I don't know if you can say the most rural, but I'm going to. What's the most rural nursing thing you've ever done?
I think the most rural for me is different to what I'm doing and supporting rural nurses, rural practitioner, clinical practitioner nurses in practice. So, for example, the west coast of New Zealand, Stewart Island, Pitt Island, those are nurses that I have supported. Most isolated, no other health practitioner available, just themselves, 24/7. But my most rural thing that I've done is to support those nurses. So to support them politically, advocate on their behalf, undertake activist tendencies in my practice, education, research, and policy development.
Do we train rural nurses?
We provide education that has a rural thread or a rural spin. We do not in New Zealand have an undergraduate Bachelor of Nursing rural nursing course at all. We have threads running through our BN diploma, degree, and we did have a postgraduate diploma of primary rural healthcare. It was interdisciplinary. We set it up in 1998 through the Christchurch School of Medicine, University of Otago, and it was interdisciplinary, as I say, but that was dedicated to rural. So it was rural educators providing an education system for rural practitioners who then later became the clinical rural educators for the next cohorts coming through. Since 2003, kind of 2004, 2005, with a new contract to a new organisation, did have a specific rural nursing, not interdisciplinary course, but that slowly has not been translated into a rural course for rural practitioners. Medicine does have it, and that's quite political, but nursing doesn't in New Zealand anymore.
So most nurses that find themselves in a rural area are translating their urban, mostly urban education into rural kind of on the fly.
That's quite right. Despite the postgraduate, let's say, for example, organisations, education organisations saying it is rural, when you talk to the rural practitioners, it's not. It is a translation, and it's not rural for rural. Some countries do that. I'm working at the moment with the University of Highlands and Islands, and they have providing a Master's of Rural Health Science for rural nurses, which is specifically what we did almost 30 years ago, and it's very exciting.
Once they get practiced in their practice, is that recognised? Do they get a different accreditation as practitioners in rural?
Not in New Zealand, no. No, we are still registered nurses, or if they become a nurse practitioner, which is an additional education, there is no speciality of rural that is recognised by our regulatory authority, Nursing Council of New Zealand. Despite years of lobbying for it, there isn't. You are a registered nurse, or you're a nurse practitioner. You can call yourself, I practice in rural areas, but there is no identifying feature that it is a rural nurse, advanced practice, or a rural nurse practitioner.
Do you think there should be?
Yes, I do think there should be. 50% of the global population reside in rural areas. Of those, 21% are Indigenous, and in New Zealand we have 18 to 20% of our Maori Indigenous population, of which there is a large degree or percentage of those in rural areas. And I think to go rural is to understand rural. To understand rural is to practice rural. And practicing rural means understanding that community. And there are core characteristics in rural communities, with the people, with the landscapes, but there is also significant differences. And so to be an exceptional practitioner in rural areas is to spend time understanding the social, political, economic, the climate, the sustainable and the cultural issues that are an essence in that individual geographic location. So rural nursing is different to other areas of practice, and it is significantly important because of the complexities of challenges, boundaries, and working alongside with community people, visitors, as well as the scope of practice, which is significantly broad.
Let's take the first of your music choices. Let's have Marlon Williams, Ahu Atu Ra. Why this one?
I have a deep connection with Marlon Williams in his songs, and this one is about never mind. So don't fret, don't dwell too long on things, and let it go.
Titiro mai, te ama. Katau ke atu nei, au atu ra. Ka mate au ki te mo.
Jean, there was a report came out from a government advisory committee in the last couple of weeks about the future of universities and research in New Zealand. And the report writers from the universities overstepped their brief and basically said that polytechnics shouldn't be doing research. Mm-hmm. Fortunately, the government has rejected that, but it's an interesting position to make. What do you think is the importance of research in polytechnics?
Well, research in general is inquiring, and it provides a focus or a direction that things are never static. Things can be done better. And actually, that is my philosophy in life. We can always do things slightly better. And I'm always looking to improve things. Sometimes it's a pain in the neck because I can't stay static. And so if that's the case, and if research provides us the tools for evidence base and how we go about improving things, then research is important for us throughout our lives, whether we are, wherever we work, wherever we provide education. And it just moves things forward. It's advancing constantly. If we are providing an education, it needs to be the best it can be. It needs to be relevant. And to do that, we need to have people that are committed to that movement, to having the best. So whatever we are, for example, at Otago Polytechnic, we are providing education, but that education needs to be based with best evidence. Who is best to underpin that best evidence? It's to keep us relevant. And it is there to keep us in dialogue, to be critical, to provide the best information, and to network with both colleagues that are of interest in that topic, but also those that aren't. And those that aren't, we can dip in and out of and listen to their point of views and they ours, and that is beneficial for us all. And it keeps the creative spark going.
Yes, I think that if you make the argument that research is a good thing for teaching,
mm-hmm.
then why would you say to some sectors, but we don't think you should do it?
Mm.
Like, if it's a good thing, then it's a good thing.
Yep.
And you can't pick and choose when it's a good thing. It's like the argument about, you know, can you be ethical if you're not doing it on Fridays?
Yeah.
You know, on Fridays, you say, oh, no, we're a bit busy, we'll just do whatever we like. And it's kind of the same for research. If it's a good thing, it's a good thing.
Yep.
We should all be doing that. Can you point to direct benefits for teaching, for your teaching, that have come from, informed by, connected to your research?
Yes. And that's interesting because I never set out to inform the teaching. I mean, I don't know where it starts and where it ends. So, I mean, the work that I've been doing for the past nearly 10 years is on community development. Well, actually, I've been doing community development since 1998, when I was taught by Dr. Nick Taylor, a rural sociologist who was part of our interdisciplinary primary healthcare diploma. And he taught me the essence of community development, how to go about doing it. And then I taught it to postgraduate and undergraduate, and we're still teaching it now. And when you get engaged in something that you're teaching, the students said, oh, we're lost. And so at an evaluation meeting with my colleagues who taught community development, we sat down and we discussed this and we said, where are the students lost? And we plotted it on a whiteboard. And I sat back after that and I went, that's a model. That's a model to help the students, but also to help those that teach it. And that became the CHASE model, Community Health Assessment Sustainable Education model. So that came out of inquiring minds. That came out of trying to provide something that was solution-focused. Then we developed the CHASE model. We used the CHASE model since 2017. And in that time, we've evaluated on a yearly basis and adapted it. And it's changed through COVID, when we could only teach through virtual means. And to today, we have a 2025 CHASE model. And it is a model that guides teaching, that supports application in practice, and has been evaluated and is now being published in a book that we published by Springer, and it has been picked up around the world, and people are adapting it. So I think it's where does one thing start and end, and I think my practice is about trying to do the best you can, but not going out with a total plan that by 2025, this is what I want to create. It is to be adaptable, flexible, to move it, the practice, to accommodate the changing environment. And I think that's been always my way and means of being a nurse. So I think my nursing practice is strong in my education practice, in my research practice. And where does one start and where does one finish? For me, it doesn't. It is a continuum. But then you see, Sam, that becomes the pedagogy. That becomes the underpinning of how you go about providing teaching and learning. And so therefore it fits in another area if we want to decompartmentalise things, which I think maybe this report does. It puts research here, it puts teaching here, and it puts application here. Well, I think the best practice is, how do you go about that? And I think we were talking about, you know, at our meeting the other day with, you know, our colleague Tobias with architecture. Where does one start? Where does one finish? We were talking with you, Sam, about, you know, the doctor professional practice. It is embedded in practice. The research that or the application or the reflection of professional practice is applied in your everyday practice. You can take it out and put it in another basket, and as you said, do it at weekends. No, that's not what it's about. And I think maybe we need to start looking in a contemporary view of the world where things are not in their own silos.
What do you think is the future of teaching and its relationship to research in a polytech?
Applying. It's applied. And I suppose being in the Bachelor of Nursing, it's application. And yes, we're starting off from... You can almost say, like I say, when we do community development, we're starting off with a clean sheet of paper. Within 4 weeks, you will, the 10 of you working together, will end up with a substantial report that is evidence-based, that has engaged in health promotion. You develop resources that are meaningful to the community, and you hand it back to the community. But it's that notion of something that isn't at the moment, but moving into something that is. And yes, for nursing, for the Bachelor of Nursing, we need to have knowledge and skills in which to base and to build on your practice, your application of your practice. But it should always come back to that. It should always come back to, how am I going to apply this? So that then is reflection. So reflection is always part of my practice. With reflection, how can I do things better? How can I... So we go back to your other question was, where does research start and teaching in it and applying it? It's all together. But we have to understand that. And it isn't where some people say, oh, I've just got to get this done. That is not what we're here for. We don't just have to get things done. This is feeding me, which will enhance me as a better practitioner. And it's all about applying that and understanding it. So, you know, in an essence, we can't put things in their own silos. To be a best practitioner, to be a really good practitioner, applying the knowledge that you've got is to be able to be a reflective practitioner.
Are the nurses that we're producing of that mindset?
Certainly in year one, they're not, because they haven't had enough application. But by year three, before they sit state finals, moving into almost like their fourth year. Yes, to a degree, I'd like to see that stronger. I'd like to see always talking about my practice, and my practice can develop more. But this is how I get to being the practitioner I am today. And I think it's that language. Because I think that we are... I know it's the way the education is funded. It's that we can't have a Bachelor of Nursing course. It has to be papers. And in those papers, yes, we know that they add and they advance and they move the person forward. But from a siloing things, they're siloed. So there's a pharmacology paper, there's pathophysiology, there's theory, there's research, there's skills or technical skills, but they're in papers. And I think we do ourselves a disservice by having it that way, rather than this is how we're going to offer you an education or the knowledge that is required in year one that moves into year two, and have it broad and not in silo. So we do ourselves a disservice. And then at the end, we say, well, you've got to put it all together now, which is hard when you've debriefed somebody into one way of looking at the world and then expect them to apply it in another way.
Do you think we're training our graduates, our nurses in particular, to be transdisciplinary? And I don't mean transdisciplinary in that they know a bit of psychology or a bit of occupational therapy or whatever. I'm more thinking about the change agent, the committed to making a difference and having the skills to do that beyond what might be considered the technical clinical skills.
To a degree, yes. And I think it's the community development projects that are helping that. And that's in year three. And that will continue in year three. However, even though it's introduced in year one, year two, and it's a staging process, they do come, the majority of them, kicking and screaming. Because they say, how is this going to be? Well, you know, firstly, I don't like, and I've changed the term from group work to teamwork. They can't say they don't like teamwork because that's part of competencies. But I don't trust teams. Some people don't work. But they are seeing the value of those projects. Firstly, working together as a team. Secondly, being able to delegate and amongst themselves who does what, when and how and why. Being answerable to each other. And that's all really good grounding in practice. But because it's a blank piece of paper with some guidance into who you're going to be working with, these are your stakeholders, bang, bang, we do that work for them. I don't think we're doing enough. I don't think we're giving enough of a carrot for them to know that it does make a difference. And, okay, you know, it's applying it over a four-week period, and I would say half of them come kicking and screaming. Out of those half, maybe half now understand it. And maybe 50% see the value of it. So some of them do understand it, and they can understand the application of what they've been learning and doing in practice, and that it will make a difference to the community. That really is about the community and the community providing feedback. And I'll just give you a very, very good example on that, and that is that I engaged with a community. It was a community of swimmers in Trouther Bay on Anglesey this year, and I asked them would they be interested, and yes, they were. And so the students engaged with the geographical location and the community as such. However, what they found out was that skin cancer has the highest percentage in the whole of England and Wales. And we were at the beach, a beautiful beach, and lots of tourists come to the beach. And the thing is that people don't use suntan lotion. And so that's the focus that they took. And in taking that focus, they weren't getting a lot of feedback from the community themselves. And so one of them said, well, I could put something up on Facebook. It's a closed Facebook page, but I could put something up on Facebook. And I said, look, for the purposes of that, you've been working for this for 3 weeks. Let's just do it. You have engaged with some people in Trouther Bay on Facebook. Let's just do it. Be very politeful, be very professional, and put it up. Overnight, they had 13 people respond to them. Of those, 6 were interested in pursuing what they had found. So much so, Melanoma UK and one of the councillors, Keith Roberts. And we are now working with them, supporting us, moving things forward, and going to actually make a difference for that beach, not necessarily for the local community, but for the visitors and everybody, by having a stand put up with free suntan lotion. That is something that the students researched. Australia does it. New Zealand really doesn't do it, and certainly they don't do it in Wales. And Melanoma UK are going to help that, and the councillor will help that as well. And so they can see the value of that. And as I said to you, Sam, a while ago, you know, that was authentic. That was real live work where they came into something with a blank page, didn't know what they were going to focus on, went with it, went with their own initiatives because they found these statistics out, evidence, and then they put something together that others are really interested in. And we're going to pursue that now. And I think that is going to make a significant difference. And those students are chuffed. So from a non-life-threatening environmental thing, which is life-threatening, the skin cancer, however, but from what they thought they were coming to do to what they ended up doing, with the feedback and feeling proud about it, they have a connection not only with Trouther Bay and Melanoma UK, but they have a connection with each other, because that kind of work is really effective teamwork, and that will never leave them.
Do the students coming in, those teams of students coming into the community project, think it's a bit weird that they're going to be working with a community, remotely working with a community in Wales or wherever it might be?
Yes, they do. But you see, I'm passionate about it. And I think, you know, I'm passionate about it because I know that we can make a difference. What does that do to me as a practitioner? It gives me, it provides me with a knowing with my practice as a community development practitioner, being able to make a difference. And a difference in that I'd like to leave these nurses, as they move into registration, that nurses is as broad as you want it to be. What we can do is make a difference everywhere, to everyone and the planet. And it's that example that in practice, or applying that in practice, which provides the knowing for these students. It's Sam. It takes a lot of energy. It takes momentum on a daily basis to be able to keep their enthusiasm up. And they do lull. However, trust in the process. Trust your chargeness.
Let's take the second of your songs. We're sticking with Marlon Williams, with Lord this time. Let's have Kahori Hei Manu, eh? Why this one?
This one is about remembrance. It's about loss. And in the process of that, it's about... it's a metaphor for the bird that isn't there anymore, doesn't sing anymore. And it's about remembering.
Kahore he manu e kakapa iroto ra. Mehe manu koe hoki, rere atu ki wawa. Mawa ie kiki, te tataki o te rau. He taonga, te ware ware, ka maumahara ke au. Hai hai a te marama, maringi toto miraka. Tira marama atu, e kimi ake rā.
Ka hore te taumaha e pehanga no rungara, o mā ake tonu ai ka peke a ngā matata. E kore ki te anau, e te hoa hotoke. E pohe wa tonu ai i te makaro e.
Hai hai a te marama, maringi toto miraka. Tira marama atu, e kimi ake rā. Ka hore i tai ahau, te tuku mihi koropai. He koingo,
he karanga,
kia ripeka haramai.
Bubble sprite of the wild coasts, secluded inlets and forests and beaches of Otago Peninsula. Dunedin's favourite goddess, Tahu Mackenzie.
Kia koutou, ngā mihi aroha nui kia koutou, ko Tahu hau. I hope you're all having the best day, beautiful superstars in your beloved universes. And I really hope, wherever you are and whatever's happening around you, this journey that we're all on together is proving to be very rewarding, very sustaining, and illuminating for you more and more each day. Who you are, a triumph of nature's art, perfect, unique, and here making things better. Thank you. Now, I know that for us all, the last several years have been very tough, very interesting. Opportunities for growth abounding, and the need for reflection, for time in solitude, for time together, and for all of us, I think, to acknowledge that we have had to really develop so many new ways of doing being, seeing, feeling. We have had to really transform our sense of self and our emotional boundaries in this world in order to maintain our resilience, and in order now to, of course, re-emerge back into the world anew and take all that learning, take all of that beautiful, beautiful pain and change and wisdom and bring it out into our everyday now. So, of course, for me being part of this show was a huge pleasure and privilege. A huge thank you to Sam and the whole Blowing Bubbles team for having me. To hear everyone's stories from all around the world, from all around Aotearoa, these beautiful stories, you know, that people share with open hearts, open minds, and they tell their truth and they give these beautiful windows into these worlds that we can all relate to and be inspired by. We can see ourselves and one another always. And what a beautiful gift that is. So I know that for myself, embarking on a new journey as I am helping the hoiho now, beautiful yellow-eyed penguin, there's so much learning that's coming through there for me, working in a beautiful new habitat, working in a beautiful new restoration project and quite different ecosystem from my beautiful heart's home of Orokonui for the last 16 years. Now to be right on the coast, right in the sea, right in the sand, right in the coastal dune forest, everything, it's all happening. So much new, which I'm really grateful for. And I don't think that, you know, unless we had been through this time of change and transformation and transmutation of frustration and pain and loneliness and everything that we've been through over the last several years, I would not have the same appreciation for the new. I would not have that real excitement and that real wonder and that real awe, you know, that is within us all the time with our inner child. And however you want to conceptualize it, as a beautiful capacity that we have as a species to connect with the divine, with the sublime, with the eternal, with the infinite, through the living world and our part in the living world. And that's always been my point of connection, and I've been very fortunate that in my life I've been able to share and grow and maintain that connection. And that's what I intend to do for the rest of my life. So, yeah, I really hope for you that you're seeing the fruits of your labours and you're seeing all of the hard work that you have put in to survive and get to where you are right here, right now, just coming into bloom and blossom. And of course we're heading into this beautiful time of spring, and Papa Tuanuku is waking up again, and the flowers and the little buds and the birds, and it's, you know, there's a great surge of Māori and life force coming to the surface, and we're really sensing this renewal that takes place around us every year, every morning, every breath, every blink. You know, we have this beautiful consciousness that we can experience renewal through always. So I really hope for you that you're enjoying this time and the world around you is reflecting the world within you, that space of beautiful new possibilities coming in for you. And I'll look forward to talking to you again soon. Thanks so much. Ka kite.
Thank you, Tahu. You're listening to Blowing Bubbles. I'm talking with Jean Ross. Jean, you're talking about making a difference everywhere and making connections between people and the planet. And as geographers, both of us, that's kind of obvious. Do you think that nursing is making that connection more strongly now?
Yes, but not in a focused way. We have, in our revised curriculum, which we're starting running this year, there is a focus on planetary health, and I'm moving that to One Health because that is what the international or the global world is talking about now, One Health. And I think it's kind of easier to understand than planetary health, to be perfectly honest. Similar things. But, you know, I was always interested in when Otago Polytechnic and yourself, Sam, you know, engaged with sustainability back in the late 2000s. And we were all championed to provide that in our courses, all bachelor courses. And I championed it out of sheer discussion with the head of the school at the time, when she said that we were excellent at it. And I said, no, we're not. We're not excellent at all. And we haven't been excellent at it. It's a value-based thing. Well, it was a value-based thing. Now it isn't. Now it is acknowledgement. But definitely in 2000.
But also in those discussions at the time, there was a response from the nursing school, which was, but we're nurses, we have to use disposable syringes and this sort of stuff. You know, are you going to have us using recycled toilet paper in surgery? And it was kind of a dismissive take.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. I mean, and that's still there, of course. because you still do need to use sterile equipment and that sort of stuff. But I think you're now surrounding it with a much more holistic take on the understanding of what health means.
Absolutely, Sam. But you see, that's taken 15 years. And it's getting the right people, the right time in the right space to be able to make a movement. A lone voice there doesn't work. It depends on your colleagues, but also it is about making sure that it's in the revised curriculum and it's in everywhere in the revised curriculum, but also, Sam, not only in our curriculum, it's in those national policies of nursing council, what education needs to include, and making sure that the words are there. They may not understand the meaning, and we can't do everything, but we can if we've got the word sustainability, we've got the word planetary health. We haven't got the word One Health in there because we wrote our curriculum just over a year ago, but those words are there. But it isn't just skating over it now, Sam. It is drilling down. And so, yes, what I'm pleased about that students, a number of them, not many, a number of them do focus on sustainability, planetary health, the implications of that. But we now have more evidence, Sam, and that's really important as well, that, 10 years ago or 13 years ago, we didn't have the evidence. There was this to and fro about climate change and this. Now we have the evidence, and we can give the evidence or the examples to students. What happened up at Gisborne? What happens here? What happens when there's a fire? What happens when there's a flood? And the downward spiral of that. Food production, economics, and so forth.
Do you have a go-to definition of sustainability?
We use the international one.
The Brundtland.
Yes, yeah. And then we've got one on One Health, and we can fit in where nursing fits with that. But whilst all this work's been happening over the last 10, 15 years, we have colleagues around the world, nursing colleagues, who are writing books about One Health, sustainability, planetary health, and nursing's contribution. And we're using a framework. It's not a nursing one, but it's an education one called the Planetary Health Framework. It's an education framework to situate our work with students and to reflect on that. And we've published a couple of papers on that that adds to the growing international body of knowledge.
You talked about when we were making the transformation of the Polytech 15 years ago, and the line we were using at that time was that the students themselves needed to go on a journey of being able to complete the sentence, a sustainable practitioner in nursing means that I... dot, 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 rather than giving them a set of, checklist of behaviours or something. Do you think that the nurses coming out today could complete that sentence?
No, I don't, because I still think we are teaching previously in that reductionist way. However, revised curriculum, we are building it completely different. So we're looking in year one at the students using photo image as to what does sustainability mean for you. Year two, we just had a conversation yesterday, is going to be building it into what does practice mean to you, taking photographs. Year three will be a critical analysis of the whole as they undertake the community development projects. And they're just going to be done slightly different. They're going to be done with big groups, and they're going to be done over a whole year, so they can reflect on that. And I think for reflecting on their contribution to planetary health and their understanding. So I think that would be a very good end product as a reflection. A sustainable practitioner in nursing can or will bang, bang, bang.
You did research overseas this year. Where'd you go?
I went on a research and study trip. I did a total of 6 weeks, organised invitations to University of Aberystwyth, University of Highlands and Islands, community development projects, looking at the impact of the previous community development projects, and talking with others, especially rural, about the investment in engaging with community development and the CHASE model. Very interested. The work I'm doing on community development, especially in Wales, I haven't guided it to Wales, but it looks like in Wales they are interested, right down from Carmarthen, which is Together for for Wales. And then there is another group in Aberystwyth, and then there's the group in Anglesey called Mourne CF. I'm working with them all and connecting them together as well on community developments, community, looking at community assets, looking at community development. University Highlands and Islands, again, very interested. And it looks like that communities and organisations are now looking to community development as a means to go forward. And I think that's healthy because we've been doing this for, as I said, I've been part of it for nearly 30 years and developing it. So community development is exceptional. I also went to the International Congress of Nursing conference in Helsinki, where I met a lot of older colleagues and presented there on community development and talked to a number of potential authors to give a broad perspective of rural nursing in advanced practice around the world. And so it takes time, Sam. Having these conversations is engaging. It's setting a seed, and then it's slowly following up with things over a time. And I think that the work that we did in 2024 with the panel discussion at the Royal Geographical Society, where we met up with six other like-minded academics related to community development, and the commitment that we had to each other with each other was that we could see the advantages of coming together of community development and having a proposal accepted by the Geographical Journal that we would have a special issue, and we've been working on that. And so we undertook a workshop on that while I was also away. And then what we're going to do, Sam, as you know, is we're going to map other people's understanding of concepts in their own community development, and we're going to actually come together and build that. And that's capacity. And, you know, right at the beginning, Sam, you talked about, you know, where do I see research and teaching in this and that? And again, that is building capacity and moving forward different ideas, but generating where there is similarities and therefore depthing understanding.
So there's more books to write?
No.
No?
No.
Oh.
No more books. No.
I'll hold you to that.
Five is enough, Sam. And it just adds, you know, five books, all related to rural. I haven't written a whole book myself, so I've edited, and that's the way I work. I network, I pull people together. And three of those books, the first three, are all related to New Zealand. And you know, Sam, no one else in rural, in health, has written a book in New Zealand on rural health. I think that's something that will leave a mark on. And they're all about, two of them are rural nurses, one is about the rural support network.
I think I've asked you this before, but I'm going to ask it anyway. What's your superpower?
Wanting to make a difference. Wanting to improve things. And connecting with people. I think that's more than anything now, Sam, actually, is my superpower is being a connector. And I can reflect on that now. And I can say that at the age I am now. Because I don't think you know you're a connector or you're a networker until you can reflect on it and you can see the difference it makes. And people actually say, you know, you're a networker, Jean.
Do you have any advice for our listeners?
Listen to the music. Listen to Marlon Williams. Believe in yourself. Believe in your ideas and go for it. And if it fails, great, because you've learned from it. Be as creative as you can and know what we all have an essence of what we want to do. Go for it.
Thank you very much indeed. Let's go for it. What are we going out to, Jean?
We're going out to another Marlon Williams. Kahore he po engari tawa ua kapatua tokiri e ho mai ra tokiri hei.
pō ka hore, ka hore he pō.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.